Good morning. I'd like to bring the House Committee on Business and Labor to order. Monday, February 16, 2015, committee. Today we have an informational meeting with invited testimony only. Sort of an overview of paid sick leave, House Bill 2005. And up first, to get us started, I think we have three legislators to provide us the background of this bill. So with that, I will open the informational meeting and start off with Senator Rosenbaum. Good morning. If you'd identify yourself for the record, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Very pleased to start the week with you again this week. And I'm also very pleased to join my two colleagues in support of our bill dealing with paid sick days. So I have a few comments. And for the record, I'm Diane Rosenbaum, state senator from District 21. And I'll just make a few opening comments. My colleagues will talk about the details of the legislation. Every day, colleagues, Oregonians get up early so that they can go to work and earn enough to help their families get by. But when working people get sick, too many of them face an impossible dilemma: to go to work sick to keep food on the table, or stay home and risk losing their job or facing discipline from the boss. Everyday Oregonians work hard just to get by, but they need to be able to keep their jobs, support their families, and care for themselves when they get sick or for a loved one when they fall ill. Unfortunately, there are far too many Oregonians who do not have access to a single minute, let alone an entire hour of paid sick leave from their job. They can't afford to miss out on part of a shift to see a doctor or to stay home to recover from the flu. When their kids can't go to school because they're homesick, these Oregonians are forced to choose between providing for their family and caring for their family. No one should have to decide between their own health and being able to feed their family. For these families, every penny counts. A few days of lost pay can make up the difference in being able to buy groceries for the month or being able to pay the family health care premium. 80% of the lowest wage workers have no paid sick leave whatsoever. These workers are much more likely than wealthier Oregonians to provide hours and hours of unpaid care to elderly family members. This makes the choice between a family's health and a job even more difficult. This bill will help to make sure working people don't have to choose between their work and their family's well-being. By providing paid sick leave for employees, we can help more Oregonians get just a small amount of time to make a huge difference for families who are struggling and many of whom are frankly on the brink of poverty. This is fundamentally a fairness issue. Providing paid sick leave will help the family budget, but it will also greatly impact our ability to prevent poverty and help more families get off the safety net. This is working well in Portland, in other local jurisdictions that are poised to enact similar laws. This is something that should not depend on where you live. It's a basic right that all Oregonians should have. And colleagues, I commend this bill to you. My colleagues will be talking about the details, and I, of course, would be happy to answer any of your questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator. I think we'll go ahead and listen to the other legislators before we ask questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Elizabeth Steiner Hayward, State Senator from Senate District 17. It's a privilege to be before you today speaking about this important piece of legislation. I'd like to start by speaking briefly about our process in arriving at the bill that you see before you. As you will remember, a bill talking about earned sick leave was presented before us in the 2013 session, and we didn't really have the opportunity to work through it to everybody's satisfaction, so didn't pass it at that time. After that, Representative Vega Peterson, from whom you'll be hearing shortly, and I were invited to take the lead in chairing a very diverse work group that met about 10 times over the course of 18 months, beginning in the summer of 2013. That group consisted of both proponents and purported opponents, and I say purported because many of them came to the point where they realized that we were working in good faith and were concerned about everybody's issues in this area, although I can't guarantee everybody's going to support it still. But we had representatives from the Oregon Business Alliance, from Associated Oregon Industries, from the National Federation of Independent Business, the grocers, a range of different unions, including building and construction trades, the UFCW folks. There was a really, really broad array of people in that room. And we had very, very thoughtful, productive conversations. And much of what you see before you reflects changes that were made to the bill to address concerns brought up by some of the business organizations and by some of the other folks at the table. We took what we saw as being the best practices from other municipalities such as Seattle and Portland and San Francisco that have had these ordinances in place for some period of time. So although not everybody walked away from the table agreeing that they could support this legislation, everybody walked away from the table confident that we had had an open and inclusive process and had listened carefully, which was very important to us as we moved forward. The second point I'd like to bring to your attention, that this is not just a business issue. Although this is a business committee, Representative Holvey has been kind enough to allow me to speak briefly about public health issues. As Senator Rosenbaum alluded to, we have people coming to work sick every single day. And after what we've been dealing with over the past 12 months with an influenza vaccine that didn't quite hit its mark, and therefore we have a lot more people with the flu this year, the Ebola crisis, and now the measles outbreak, we should be well aware that contagion in the workplace poses a serious risk to productivity and to public health. And having the opportunity to stay home without, as Senator Rosenbaum said, losing a day's wage, worrying about keeping your roof over your head, or worrying about facing discipline or possibly job termination from your employer, actually in the long term is both beneficial for public health and for business productivity. I personally know that when I'm suffering even from a bad cold, let alone from true influenza, I'm not at my best at work, and I think most of us would agree with that. And when I go to work and I share that lovely virus with somebody else, and they share it with somebody else, all of a sudden we have a bunch of people in our job sites who are not working to capacity, who are at more risk for making mistakes, or simply not providing the level of service that our customers, whatever that customer group is, deserves. So I really want to emphasize that this is a public health issue, that this is also a workplace productivity issue. The third thing I'd like to talk about a little bit is that you'll notice, and there's been some commentary already about the fact that we have a pretty broad definition of family in this bill. There are several reasons for that, not least of which is obviously the fact that families today are defined a little differently than when perhaps you and I were growing up. I grew up in a middle-class community where it was a pretty traditional mom, dad, and 2.2 kids. But that's not really true anymore. We have lots of single-parent households where people are sharing with another family. We have two single moms with four kids total sharing one household, and they are each other's support network. They are each other's support line. They consider each other's kids part of their own families. We have same-sex couples who have not yet been able to marry, but who are clearly united in long-term stable partnerships where they are clearly family. We have situations where aunts and uncles have taken children in because their parents are unable to care for them but have never gone through a formal adoption process or legal guardianship process. They've just been their de facto parents and family for years. So we need to think very, very carefully about how we define family and make sure that we're not limiting who has access to this legislation when they have somebody who's near and dear to them is really considered a very, very close family member who needs that additional support. So for all of those reasons and more, I urge your support for this legislation. It has been proven to be effective in multiple jurisdictions. It has not been shown to impact business profitability, and in fact, it's kept it at worst stable, if not improving. It does reduce turnover in the worksite, and we all know that recruitment is more expensive than retention of employees, especially in skilled places where there's a lot of training involved going forward. Representative Vega Peterson will go through more details on the bill, but I wanted to just bring these two points. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning, Chair Holvey. Good morning, members of the committee. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify today on House Bill 2005. There is also an identical Senate.
Introduce yourself.
Oh, thank you. And for the record, my name is Jessica Vega Peterson, state representative for House District 47 in
thank
East
you,
Portland.
Thank you, Senator.
Yes, you're keeping that. And I just wanted to let you know, so House Bill 2005, there's an identical Senate bill that's also having a hearing today, Senate Bill 454, which we'll also be testifying for. So my colleagues did a good job of setting the background of why we need paid sick time and what and some of the details of the bill. I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the families that do and don't have paid sick time in Oregon. So right now, 47% of workers in the private sector lack access to any paid sick time. This actually changes when you look at lower income workers. 71% of lower income workers do not have access to a single day of paid sick time. And if you look at that in terms of the numbers, Oregonians who are earning $65,000 a year or more, 82% of them have access to paid sick time. But if you look at Oregonians who earn less than $20,000 a year, that's only 29% have access to any kind of paid sick time. So this is obviously, there's some equity issues involved in how this policy, who currently has access to paid sick time. We also see a difference in when you look at households that are run by single mothers. So there's 22% of children in Oregon live in households headed by a single mother. These mothers and thus their families are more likely to live in poverty. So there are 44% of all single mothers in our state are living in poverty. But if you look at those people of color, 60% of Latino and African-American mothers are living in poverty. That's opposed to 41% of single white mothers. When there is only one breadwinner in the family and that person is unable to take any time off to take care of themselves or their family, they have to choose between staying home with their child or losing access to money that's vital for the survival of their family. This is a financial crisis issue for many families. Senator Hayward also talked a little bit about the impact on small businesses. We are a state made up of small businesses, and they're run on the dedication and support of their workers. We know that when employees have access to earned sick time, it reduces the harmful impacts on workplace productivity, employee turnover, and health care costs. This is all things that save businesses time and money and allows them to keep their well-trained staff. So what we're doing in House Bill 2005 is really creating a floor-level standard for a paid sick time policy. And now I'd like to take a few minutes to go over some of the main points in the bill. So first of all, in the discussions that we had with the work groups over the past year and a half, we talked on several key points. And as the senator said, we had a lot of discussion around these things, and we're able to incorporate some of the changes into the bill that you have before you. I did want to recommend there is a report on the outcome of that work group that you should have either available up there or available on OLIS. And I recommend that you take a look at that. That talks a little bit more in detail about some of the discussions that we had through that process. So some of the main points that we talked about and some of the main provisions that you'll see in the bill have to do with the employer threshold. So all employers, regardless of their size, are required to provide employees up to 56 hours of paid sick time each year. That's what you find in the bill before you. The reasons that sick time can be taken can be used for the care of themselves or a family member for both mental and physical illness. It also is for the purpose of domestic violence leave is covered in the bill as well. And of course, if there are any closures of school or a place of employment due to a public health emergency or a contagious disease, that's also covered in there. So this is something that you'll find as you walk through the language of the bill. for the definition of the family, Senator Sino here talked a little bit about this. So it is the same as the OFLA definition of family and also includes an individual related by blood or affinity to the employee whose close association with the employee is equivalent to that of a family relationship. For the bill that you see before you, the accrual rate of paid sick time is 1 hour of sick time for every 30 hours work. And again, this will goes up to a maximum of 56 hours of paid sick time. One of the things that we talked about and that we added into the bill is the ability to front load the 56 hours. So if an employee, if an employer is already providing paid sick time, if they know that it's at least 56 hours, they have the ability to front load those to keep the administrative down of having to track those hours. I can front load those for the employees. Employees begin accruing paid sick time on the first day of their employment, and they can use that paid sick time anytime after the first 90 days of employment. One of the things that we had many discussions about was about the existing policies that employers may have. So an employee with an equal or better policy, whether it's a PTO or a sick time policy, they can be used for the same purposes as what's outlined in the bill. They don't have to offer additional paid sick time as long as it's in compliance with the law. And that's one of the things that we know as we are working through this during session is we want to make sure that the experience that employees and employers had in Portland when this was enacted, that we're taking the best lessons from those to make sure that the implementation of a statewide policy would be as simple and easy as possible. For exemptions, so we do have exemptions for employees in the building and construction trades, as well as some of the unions that have hiring hall practices. We just found that the functionality of that worked better to use the existing paid sick policies that they have. Sick time requirements would apply to all other unions and collective bargaining agreements. And we also say that you can use the shift trading, which was really important, especially for those folks in the restaurant industries, of using that to cover sick time. Both employers and employees seem to like that practice, so we kept that. There is no retaliation. Employees are protected from retaliation or discrimination for their use of paid sick time. And medical verification by employers is allowed. So those are some of the main details that you'll find in the bill in terms of the policy before you. There are a list of amendments that we have that we know through our discussions that are going to be needed for this bill. Some of these are fairly general. One is where the sick time provisions are going to live in the statute. We're going to have them in Oregon Chapter 653. That is per Bowley's request. We're also working with Bowley to come up with the best definition of what an employee is. There's not a definition of employee. Usually it's determined on, and Bowley makes a determination on the type of relationship. So we want to make sure there's clarity for employers in that language. We will be using the existing definition of employer. And there are some things such as there was a duplicate section that you'll find in the bill that we know we need to remove, making sure that domestic violent records are kept separate and confidential. And we'll also make sure that there's clarity around the retaliation statute, as well as making sure that for collective bargaining agreements that employees cannot have negotiated vacation time suddenly changed to paid sick time. So we want to make sure that some of the negotiated things that are covered in collective bargaining agreements are going to be valued and would still be covered separately from the paid sick time policy. So those are some of the main provisions in the bill. I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you. I appreciate all three of you. I think gave a very good overview of the bill and where we're at right now. Questions from the committee? Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, this could go to all of you. I have several questions here. And I probably shouldn't ask them all, but one, Senator Rosenbaum, you mentioned it as a basic right, and I'm just wondering in the context of fairness, if it's fair to the employers of Oregon in the same regard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Barreto. I think it is fair to employers because, for one thing, employers who have people at work who shouldn't be at work because they're sick are actually, in some cases, particularly in food service occupations, food preparation, or serving, in maybe violating the law. Existing law says that you should not have people in those occupations at work when they are sick. So employers are actually under an obligation to send those people home, but in many cases, that's not happening because people won't acknowledge that they are sick. So, and there's also a level playing field aspect to this. You know, employers that have provided this are trying to compete with employers that are relying on people to come to work when they are sick. So in that sense, it will be better, I think, for our entire state, for the people that work there, as well as for their employers.
Mr. Chairman, may I just add a quick comment on that? Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, Representative Barreto. The one point I'd also add is that we have data from cities and states that have already implemented universal paid sick time laws, including San Francisco's, which has been in place for, at this point, 8 years. And the Senior Vice President for Policy for the San Francisco Chamber of Commerce, obviously a strong business organization, a quote from him says, "The impact of San Francisco's law on employers, quote, minimal. By and large, this has not been an employer issue. San Francisco's economy is booming." A study has shown that more than 70% of employers report no impact on profitability and that they have not had to change their prices for those who are selling specific goods to address this. So I think that we can see that for the vast majority of employers, this has not really had the negative impact that people are worried it will have. And these data are reproduced in Washington, D.C., which has had its law in place for approximately 7 years now, in Connecticut, where they've been in place for 2 years, and other places where they've been looking for dealing with this for quite some time now. So I appreciate the concerns of the business community, but we have not actually seen these concerns materialize in places that have had these policies for some time.
Thank you. I got time for about one more question. Representative Widener.
I could. Can you kind of hit on it, Representative Vega Peterson? I'm just kind of curious why we went with 30 hours rather than 40 hours for calculating the time off, because, I mean, we calculate as full-time, usually a 40-hour work week. Why did we go to 30 and not 40, just to make it simple, the way businesses work with their books, to keep the accounting easy for them as well?
Yeah, thank you. Chair Holby and Representative Widener. So thanks for the question. So this paid sick time policy applies to all employees, whether they're full-time or part-time. The one hour of accrual for 30 hours work, we want to make sure that even employees who are working at a part-time rate still have the ability to accrue enough hours of paid sick time that they may need to take care of themselves and their family. This is one of the things that we're having discussions about, and we've received feedback on from different stakeholders. But we decided to go with something that we would have a strong paid sick time available for even part-time workers.
So, thank you. I appreciate your testimony this morning, and I know you have 8:30 commitments in front of you, so I'll give you a little bit of time to get there, and thank you so much for leading us off this morning.
Thank you.
Up next, I'd like to have Amanda Fritz and Scott Winkles. Good morning. If you'd introduce yourself for the record, please.
Good morning. I'm Portland City Commissioner Amanda Fritz, and thank you all for being here and for having this work session. It's very exciting. Portland adopted our paid sick time ordinance in March of 2013, and then we implemented it on January 1st of last year, and so we've had a whole year of having the ordinance in place. So I wanted to share some of the things, lessons learned, and also to tell you it's absolutely one of the best things I've ever done as a legislator. There's in a city in Oregon, and in the relatively small state of Oregon, there are a few things that we do. There are many things that we do that make a difference for people, and I also want to start by thanking each one of you for your public service. I know that it's not often that people recognize that, and also this can make a difference at the national level. So a further answer to the question about why it's 1 hour earned per 30 hours worked is because that's pretty much becoming the standard nationally, and that was what was in the federal bill. So we also had the same discussion as far as the rate of accrual, and most of the jurisdictions and states that have adopted this paid sick time do have one in 30. So looking at this becoming a national law, it would be better to have it so that we don't have to then change all of the accounting once it goes national. In addition to being a public health issue, as Senator Steiner Hayward said, I'm an Oregon Nurses Association member, and our ONA was very influential in helping to pass our bill. The public health issue is clear. It's also an education issue, because what we heard was that high school students are staying home to take care of sick younger children and therefore not being in school. So that's a key point. We heard so many stories of people who had been disciplined for taking even an hour off work because of a migraine, who lost their jobs because they or their child was sick. We heard from construction trade women who had to go back to work the same week as having a child, because otherwise they lose their seniority. They certainly have the paid bank, but if you don't cover, if you lose your seniority and lose your opportunity to be first at the hiring call, then that's a problem. So that was why in Portland we did not exempt the construction unions. They're certainly exempted from having to track and provide the payment, but they are covered by the protections against retaliation, and I think that's really important. So I encourage you to keep it simple. Keep everybody in. In our law, if you have a business with five or fewer employees, it's unpaid sick time. If it's six or more, it's paid. That just adds to the difficulty of tracking, or adds to the complexity of tracking. If the calculations of when are you five, when are you six, if you fluctuate between the two of those, what happens? It just is not worth the hassle. In fact, we heard from many businesses that it's really they want to keep the administration as simple as possible. And if you think of it like Social Security taxes or other accruals that are tracked regularly by businesses, I think of paid sick time as like minimum wage. It's a standard for which Oregon should have for everybody. And we've figured out many ways to do the front loading, the paid time off. We did have a few employers who had previously been giving their employees paid time off, and they switched it to sick time, which meant that then employees couldn't take a vacation. They would have to pretend that they were sick to get the same benefit, which I hope that the state regulations will make it so that those kinds of things don't happen. Because the intent is, if you already have paid time off that you're allowed to use in an emergency, then you don't have to provide any additional sick time. So it's really not as – it's both – we made it somewhat more challenging by having the paid, unpaid. And, of course, it's more challenging because it's just Portland, and we had to figure out when people are working in Portland, when they're not working in Portland. We heard from the business community when we were about to enact ours, don't do it just in Portland. We will help you get it passed statewide. Well, that didn't happen in the 2012 session and 2013 session, so that's why we went ahead and implemented ours. I would be more than happy to answer any questions now or later, because I feel so passionately about this that it's going to be one of the greatest things that you will do in this session, amongst many other great things, I'm sure.
Thank you.
Chair Holwey, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Scott Winkles, and I represent the League of Oregon Cities. As an employer group, Oregon's cities address sick time through the collective bargaining process. The bill, the benefits offered in the bill are fairly I would say typical or somewhat less than what we usually end up negotiating at the bargaining table. I would also point out that as cities, if you recall back to the year H1N1 hit Oregon, a lot of cities, most cities I would hope, all frankly, were encouraging people who were ill to stay home. And so if you have an employer who is actively encouraging their employees to stay home or enacting policies where they could be in violation if they were to show up visibly demonstrating ill and you're not providing a benefit, it becomes profoundly problematic. So this bill is, we view this as a good thing. and it's something that we've managed. And if you think about the services cities provide, we can't have people showing up sick for some of them. It's dangerous to the employee. It's dangerous to coworkers. Can be dangerous to the public. If you have police departments, public works folks showing up who just aren't at their best. Additionally, I would call your attention to Section 10 of the bill, which protects local control. The bill creates a minimum standard of sick time, but it still allows local ordinances and allows cities to innovate and provide creative solutions to issues on this topic around the state. And with that, I will accept your questions.
Questions? Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You've kind of, you sparked questions, the two of you. Mine, a little bit, would be, how is the city of Portland policing this? So, because I guess as a business, when I have somebody working in Portland, they fall under your jurisdiction, but the business is located outside of Portland. How do you, I mean, there's people going in and out of Portland all day long for work. How are you tracking that and policing it to hold those employers accountable?
So the enforcement, Representative Wider, Chair, thank you for the question. The enforcement is complaint-driven by the employee, and we have a contract with BOLI, who I understand will be implementing your regulations also. So we have gotten to a number of agreements or understandings with employers that they don't in every case have to track every minute that somebody's in Portland or not. They can average out if they want to. Like I said, it'll be much easier when it's statewide. I mean, there are a few issues with California and Idaho and Washington State, but by doing it statewide, it'll be much easier for employers.
Other questions?
So, and if I might just follow up, we have, BOLI had several complaints. We started with a 6-month safe harbor, that understanding that it was new and that people wouldn't, both employees and employers, wouldn't necessarily understand all the rules right away. And so we've gone with a soft touch, as indeed they have in Seattle and San Francisco and in the states that have done it, that there hasn't been the sick time police making sure that going out proactively, it in all cases is complaint driven with an enforcement agency that's used to enforcing things such as BOLI.
Chair Bolfi.
Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Companies that have given, I just want to know a little bit how that might work in Portland, but companies that have given paid holidays and then were required to give paid sick days, did any of those companies change from the paid holiday format to then transfer that over to the paid leave?
Representative Barreto, Chair Hovey. Most of them adapted their policy language to say that it could be used for sick time in an emergency and didn't take away the paid time off. And that's obviously how it should be done, and it's the easiest thing to do, too.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm curious, do you know where we, because a work week to me is 40 hours, where do we come up with 7 days instead of 5 days on this leave? Because it's 56 hours, which is 7 days. You know how we arrived at that?
That's a difference at the in the proposal at the state. Even 7 days, I mean, it's mostly not anticipated you'd be taking all of the time in one catastrophic illness. Thinking of the range of reasons that a person might need to take paid sick time, I think having more rather than less, I think San Francisco's is 9 days. So I think the state legislators picked something that they thought was reasonable. What we're finding is that most employees don't max out the use of the sick time, and something to consider is whether to allow more to roll over so that people are encouraged to save it for a future catastrophic illness.
Representative Noss.
Mr. Chair, that's an excellent observation that you just made. Does our bill allow for a sick leave to roll over and accrue? Like if you don't use 7 days in 1 year, can you bank it for another time?
It's negotiable.
probably one of the questions we'll be continuing to examine.
Okay. I hope it does.
If I might add, I believe that it allows, ours allows the rollover of the maximum amount, but not above that, which okay. Then you potentially get into the situation of people taking their time at the end of the year, particularly if they don't have any other paid time off. So that providing some encouragement for rolling over more, I think, would be an improvement. We've learned a lot, and so I personally think that Eugene's regulations are better than ours. We helped advise them, and I'm sure that yours can be even better.
Thank you. Mr. Winkles, I wanted to make sure I heard you correct on the preemption issue, though it sounded like the League of Oregon Cities was supporting this bill. You highlighted the spot that prevents the state from preempting cities from doing something more than what this bill requires. Did I hear that correctly?
Chair Holby, members of the committee, you did. This does protect the way I read Section 10 is this is a this, the state creates a minimum but does not preempt the local jurisdiction from tackling this problem from another way, provided that other way doesn't go below.
So does that have the potential of creating the disparity, I guess, between cities of how they treat sick leave, which seemed to be one of the issues that Portland was having early on?
Chair Holby, members of the committee, I think that's one way to look at it. The issue is I think at the League of Oregon Cities, we support local control, and we would like the legislature to share that view in cases where it is possible. I think when you limit local control, you limit the ability for local governments to innovate and to experiment. And I think that's something that's valuable.
All right. Thank you very much.
Sir, as a practical matter, as long as the state legislation is good or better, I doubt that most cities are going to want to have an additional local system because it's really complicated to do it just standalone. So I encourage you to pass something that Eugene and Portland and all the other cities can say, yay.
We'll keep that in mind.
Thank you.
Any other last question? Representative Widener, last question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this may go to Bully Scott, but I'm looking at allowing the cities to innovate and everything, and I'm just thinking, what if I have a company that's outside of the state, yet I have satellite offices, in different places, and we have a location in Portland? If I have an employee fly into Portland or to Eugene, now all of a sudden they come back, they file a complaint, even though they're in another state where they reside, they can complain because I wasn't giving them the sick time. And you think the cities are going to be contracting with Bully to enforce that? And how would Bully actually enforce that?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Same as what I had asked before, where I have employees going in and working in Portland and I'm outside of Portland, and I'm responsible for them accruing the sick time for the time that they're in Portland. Well, now if you're out of state, so let's just say I have a business in Idaho, so because that could be where a legitimate place for us to be, that's trucking into Portland all the time, that truck driver, how am I responsible, or how's the city of Portland going to go after that business in Idaho for that employee when they're commuting back and forth?
Chair Holvey, Representative Widener, if you'll permit me to take a stab at that using a little bit of conjecture, but what I think would happen would be that if the complaint was made, if the employee during the course of the investigation it was discovered that, say, Kroger's sent somebody from Cincinnati to the Portland Fred Meyer's office, that employee makes a complaint. Is that?
Yes.
That's what you're getting at. I think if during the course of that investigation, while you were examining the complaint, that employee wasn't stationed in or assigned to Portland, I don't know that would fly as a complaint. I'm not sure how that would.
It's just that they had him come and work for 2 weeks in the Portland office, or a month, 2 months. I have a 6-month project in Portland. How's that going to go? Because that happens a lot. I mean, I'll get contracted to a business in another state for a month, 2 months, 6 months. So now, would me, with my company being in another state, would Boley go after that company because I had an employee stationed in Portland for 6 months?
Representative White, many of the big multi-state companies have already dealt with this because they have offices or outlets in San Francisco and Seattle. So they are able to adapt. They're the ones that are going to have the fancy payroll services and just be able to plug in whatever the local laws are.
So we have, and that might be a good question for the next panel.
Yes.
So I really appreciate you testifying this morning, coming down and braving the I-5 to get here, which a lot of us do all the time. But thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
Up next, I'd like to have Paloma Sparks. And any reinforcements that you may need? Good morning. If you'd identify yourself for the record, please.
Good morning, Chair Holby, members of the committee. I'm Paloma Sparks with the Bureau of Labor and Industries. I am just going to give you sort of an overview of how we've worked with the City of Portland and how we're beginning our work with the City of Eugene. As you know, as you've heard, the Bureau of Labor and Industries enforces the sick time in Portland. We are currently have been working with Eugene throughout their process on how to develop their sick leave, their sick time, the same as we did with Portland. A key aspect to that is not just the enforcement piece, but also our technical assistance for employers. Our technical assistance for employers is exclusively for employers. It's a resource. It's separate from our enforcement capacity. We do outreach. We do seminars, written materials. We have a hotline that employers can call into. So as we were preparing to have the Portland ordinance go into effect, and since it's been in effect since January of 2014, technical assistance has done a number of seminars. They've answered quite a few phone calls. We have materials on our website. We work closely with Portland on sort of figuring out issues. So we also have our enforcement side. So our enforcement side enforces the right of workers to take paid and unpaid leave. We also enforce the right for them to take that leave without fear of retaliation. And we think that the reason why we've been so successful in Portland has been the work that outreach that we've done with the City of Portland to employers. After we began doing those seminars, calls to technical assistance for employers sort of stabilized. We continue to provide education through seminars, written materials, and our hotline. One of the challenges that we noticed that employers faced was the tracking of employees in and out of the city. We think that a statewide policy will move us forward in a great way to ease that difficulty. I know at the beginning when the ordinance went into effect, people were trying to figure out how to make their existing leave time policies work. Front loading has been a great ease. Technical assistance always advises employers to do just that. It makes tracking really much less cumbersome. So I would say with that, where we can do as much public education and outreach and trainings, and then just advising employees of their rights to take sick time under this new statewide provision will go a really long ways. We are ready to help the legislature in any way we can to expand sick time to all Oregonians and to help employers to be in line with the law and help workers to know their rights under the law. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Widener, I'll let you carry on.
So, since I think we have the correct people here, well, there's lots of issues I see with this. And I'm thinking one, I have two sons that actually work in Portland that they sell cars. And then I've been involved in the restaurant industry and everything where you have the front end where they get paid on tips. My boys get paid strictly commission. How do you police something like that when they're strictly commission sales, or you're in a restaurant and you're a server and you rely primarily, a lot of your salary is based off of tips? How do you regulate that? How do you police that for the paid sick time? Because it says average hourly wage, if I'm looking at this correct. So,
Chair Holvey, Representative Widener, under the existing sick leave, how it works is that it's whatever your base salary would be. So,
which is zero.
No.
For the commission.
Commission,
it'd
be zero.
Under commission. State law, every employee.
Because you have realtors, all these people, their base salary is zero. They get paid commission.
Chair Holvey, Representative Widener, every employee is entitled to earn at least minimum wage for all hours that they worked. So if it was literally zero, then they would be entitled for minimum wage for those hours that they would take for sick time.
Where is that in there?
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't believe that's a fact when it comes to, I think, realtors and mortgage brokers as well, because I know as a realtor, what you get out of escrow is what you get paid. You don't get paid a base salary because you're an independent contractor.
Chair Holvey, Representative Esquivel, if you were an independent contractor, then there would be no one to provide you with these benefits, and then you would not be subject to the law. Because you would not be an employee.
I wanted to clarify that.
Thank you. Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I kind of have a dog in this fight. I do have a business. We have around 80 employees. We give full health care benefits and don't ask them to pay anything. We give 7 paid holidays. We give vacation time, profit sharing, matching 401k. We have unpaid sick leave, but we offer employees the opportunity to come in on Saturdays at time and a half and make that up. And now the state is going to ask me to pay an additional 6 or 7 days of paid sick leave, which even at a minimum of $15 an hour would cost me around $818 per employee, $65,000 a year. And when you average that in with other higher paid employees, you'd be looking at $100,000 to $110,000 a year that the state would require me in addition to what I already pay. Now, going back to the idea of fairness, you know, do you consider that a fair proposition?
Chair Holvey, Representative Barreto, I don't have a real opinion on that. I think that if the legislature makes a decision that sick time is something that they want to pass, then it is our job to implement that law. I would say that if with an existing vacation benefit, you can convert that a portion of that to sick time.
Thank you. So what has been, as far as feed, what to Boley, what has been their major hang-up or the major difficulty that they're having with trying to implement this?
Chair Holvey, as I mentioned, one of the issues has been employees who are coming in and out of the city, say, truck drivers that are coming in and out, tracking that time, because sometimes it's difficult to say where does the city of Portland begin and where does it end. Additionally, we have employers that have had concerns about suspected abuse and medical documentation requirements. We have rules around that for OFLA, and we ask that they sort of pattern their how they handle that the same way. I think under this existing, the proposal to for the statewide sick time, the record keeping will actually be easier than it has been under Portland. I think we've been trying to figure out how to make it all work in Portland. I think that this expanded statewide will fix that problem. And then we've just heard various concerns about collective bargaining agreements. I also think that the statewide policy looks to fix that problem.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Hurd.
I think this is an appropriate question for Bully. I'm concerned about abuse from the standpoint of that the bill as written currently mandates first day pay for sick leave. So if I call in sick to my employer tomorrow, which would be Tuesday, I'm instantly in the pipeline for getting recovering sick leave time. I believe, and don't quote me on this, but I believe California, it's third day. And the reason that's important, it's either second or third day, I've heard. But the reason that's important, regardless of whether California is doing it or not, is because, say, the day after Super Bowl Sunday, a lot of people, for whatever reason, may not want to go to work on Monday. And by my math, every 6 weeks of 40-hour weeks equals one full paid day off, essentially. And so, to me, first day pay is just open season for abuse. What's your comments on that?
Chair Holvey, Representative Hurd, we haven't seen a lot of that kind of abuse. I know that that is a fear that has been mentioned. It hasn't come to pass. From what we understand, most employees are not taking all of the leave that they would be entitled to under the law.
Follow up. They may not be taking all of the leave, but that doesn't mean that there's not abuse. I'd be curious to see the data that shows, that can prove to us that there hasn't been abuse for day after Super Bowl Sunday or 3-day weekends, essentially 4-day weekends if it was going to be already a three. You see what I'm saying? I'd really like to see the information you have there that where you draw the confidence from that.
Chair Holvey, Representative Hurd, all of our information comes from mostly conversations that employers have with technical assistants. It's not a complaint driven from employers. And employees, it's almost all complaint driven to our wage and hour division, and that is that they weren't paid for time that they asked to take off under the sick leave. So I don't know that we would have the kind of statistics that you're looking for. We can certainly see what we can come up with if we can find something.
So along those lines, are you aware of any employers that have complained about abuse?
Chair Holvey, for the most part, what we've heard of is difficulties when employers would like to have employees provide medical documentation, and there's some privacy concerns that have to be worked out when that request has been made. That's usually the kind of question that we've gotten.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate your testimony this morning, and I'm sure we'll have another opportunity to ask you some more questions. With that, I'd like to bring up Andrea Peluso and Jeff Anderson.
Good morning, Chair Holvey and members of the committee. My name is Andrea Peluso. I am the Executive Director of Family Forward Oregon, which is an organization that works to advance women's economic security. I'm also the chair of the Everybody Benefits Coalition, which is the coalition that's been working to pass paid sick time in the state of Oregon for the past 4 years, and also the co-chair of Fair Shot for All. I want to start by sharing with you a story that I've now heard more than once. It is the story of a mother who, with a sick child and without the benefit of paid sick time at work and fear of losing her job, has taken her child with her and left the child parked in the car outside of her workplace, surrounded by toys and blankets, so that she can keep her job and monitor her sick child from inside her workplace. No Oregon mother should be placed in this unjustifiable situation. This is just one of hundreds of stories that we've heard from people who work without sick time. Stories of them being fired because they needed time off to recover from illness, from delaying health care when they needed to get health care, of sick kids at school, of older siblings missing school to take care of younger siblings, and of lost income that causes a lot of undue hardship. Women are more likely to work in the kinds of jobs that do not have paid sick time, in retail, food service, child care, home health care, and others. They're also more likely to work in part-time jobs without even the most basic of benefits. They're more likely to need access to paid time off to take care of themselves and their kids and other family members who rely on them. We were thrilled to see Portland and Eugene pass paid sick time laws that ensure everyone working in those cities can earn time to recover from illness, to take care of a sick child, or to seek preventive care. Those two laws have covered nearly 300,000 working people in the state of Oregon who did not previously earn any sick time in their job. Those cities took a major step to ensure that people would not be fired, that no kids would need to stay home or stay parked in a mom's car alone, or to keep an older sibling home from school. They worked to ensure that people working in restaurants and grocery stores could stay home instead of spreading illness to others. And they ensured that people who need health care have the time that they need to access it, which is often during a work day, instead of relying on more expensive emergency and urgent care services. Yet despite those two laws, still 47% of Oregonians working in the private sector do not earn paid sick time at work, and that's true for 71% of low-income Oregonians. The process that prepared us for the consideration of House Bill 2005, which you've heard some about, has been a long and inclusive one. We began conversations about this issues with some of the legislators here today nearly 4 years ago. Over the last 3 years and through our work to pass ordinances in Portland and Eugene, we've had tens of thousands of conversations with citizens, business owners, affected workers, advocates, parents, teachers, and others. We've engaged in dozens of policy conversations, forums, town halls. And the bill before you today was shaped by three different business, labor, advocate, and legislator work group processes held in Portland, in Eugene, and over the last 18 months with leadership from Representative Vega Peterson and Senator Steiner Hayward, as you heard this morning. It was also shaped by what we've learned from following the design and implementation of sick time laws in 15 cities and 3 states. I want to point you to some submitted testimony from city administrators in the city of San Francisco who've had this law in place longest of anyone in the nation, and that testimony should be loaded in OLIS at this point. They point to exactly what their investigation and enforcement kind of mechanisms are and how it's working. The details of the bill were covered already by Representative Vega Peterson. I'm happy to say more about those. But I do want to point out that at the 1 hour for every 30-hour accrual rate, which is what exists in both the Portland and Eugene laws, as well as many laws across the country, if you work 20 hours per week, it would take you 21.5 months to earn 56 hours of sick time. If you work 30 hours a week, it would take you 14 months to earn 56 hours. If you work 40 hours per week, it would take you 10 and a half months to earn 56 hours of leave. So I just want to make sure that it's clear to everyone that while you can accrue 1 hour for every 30 hours, you are not allowed under this law to take more than 56 hours during the course of a year. Through our work groups, we have made a number of different changes based on the suggestions of employers, including ways to identify, as Representative Hurd noted, and take action in the case of abuse by employees, how to recognize what that looks like and remedies that you can take there. We've clarified administrative and record-keeping requirements, have shifted language to allow shift trading for tipped employees. We've lengthened the period under which employees can provide notice for foreseeable absences. We also strengthened the provisions around front loading, which was also noted, something that allows for less administration. We've also outlined specifically that if an employer is already allowing their employees 56 hours of paid time off, to Representative Barreto's question, in another form that can be used for the purposes required by this law, that they do not need to add additional hours. We also identified that this minimum standard should apply to everyone. People don't get sick based on the size of their employer, and they shouldn't have access to time based on the size of their employer. Also, we believe, as Commissioner Fritz noted, that this leads to simpler administration around counting employees and providing time. We believe a paid sick time law is critical to addressing public health and economic security issues that people across the state experience right now. It's about us creating the kind of Oregon where more of us can prosper and take care of our families and keep our jobs. This law ensures the basic dignity that comes with working in a job where you can take care of yourself when you're sick without losing the income that your family relies on. At its core, this law is about how we believe working families in our state should be treated. And I know none of us wants to live in a state where mothers, like those I've mentioned, are forced to choose between what is best for their sick child or the job that makes providing for that child possible. I urge your support of House Bill 2005 on behalf of the many organizations that have been working together to create this statewide standard. I believe in my submitted testimony there is a list of organizations that are part of the Everybody Benefits Coalition, and I speak on their behalf today. Thank you.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Anderson. I'm Secretary Treasurer of UFCW Local 555. We have 20,000 members, of which 16,000 are primarily in the grocery retail industry.
Can you tell us what UFCW stands for?
Excuse me, United Food and Commercial Workers, Local 555.
Thank you.
And I won't shake your hand because I feel like I would reintroduce something to you. So my apologies. I feel like I'm a little under the weather, so I do apologize. But UFCW 555 supports House Bill 2005. We've been working on it with our friends in the city of Portland, with Amanda Fritz and her leadership. The working group that was put together, which was pro and con, business, labor, community, really hashed out a lot of stuff, but I think Portland is a fine product. Eugene has subsequently passed the policy. We were thrilled with that, and we just want to stand on record in supporting House Bill 2005 and think that nobody should have to go to work sick. In my industry, primarily in the grocery retail industry, you're not compensated or accessing sick days until you get to the third day. And the reality is that means a lot of people go to work sick because they would have to forego 40% of their weekly income if they did not. This is long overdue that it should be a health policy, not a work-related policy. Collective bargaining agreements should not be excluded. It should be no different than the minimum wage. It should be a threshold standard that's in the community that makes us who we are. So if you did exempt collective bargaining outright, you would be exempting tens of thousands in food processing and in retail and food preparation. I think that would just gut the very core of what you think would be a good policy. So I encourage you to support collective bargaining being included in the policy and stand here on behalf of our 20,000 members supporting House Bill 2005. Thank you.
Do you have paid sick time right now, Jeff?
You know, I thought about that. I know. I tried to actually try to get a surrogate, but I was reminded that I have a lot of members working sick today, and that maybe I need to fulfill this obligation to be here. So I apologize.
Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Andrea. I didn't quite catch everything you said there as far as 56 hours. If you offer it in some other form, it can be taken then as sick leave. Why in this bill would it continue to say sick leave in almost every, all the way through the bill? Why wouldn't it just be paid leave? Mm-hmm. Instead of sick leave?
What we want to make clear about sick leave is that folks can access it urgently. Right. So what we found in the context of working on this over the last couple of years is that sometimes employers will offer vacation or some form of leave that has to be requested so far in advance that functionally it's not available to people for the purposes of illness. So what we've tried to do is make clear through defining what access to paid time off is, that if an employer has a policy that allows for other paid time off, as long as it's allowed for the reasons that are indicated here, that it's allowed for the purposes of urgent illness, for the care of a family member with an urgent illness, for the purposes of domestic violence protection, for the purposes of accessing preventive health care, for all of the reasons that are sort of outlined as part of this paid sick leave policy, and that's kind of where those provisions are spelled out. That as long as that leave is, they have 56 hours that's available for those purposes, there's no need to add additional time.
Follow up. So this would be qualifying then maybe as an emergency paid leave. But where in the bill, can you show me the section that tells me that can be compensated for?
I probably can. Do you want me to take a minute to do that?
Yeah, you can tell me afterwards.
Okay.
That's fine.
Here in 5A, Section 3, 5A, provides employees with paid sick time benefits or paid time off that equals or exceeds the paid sick time benefits required by this section that may be used for the employee under the same terms and conditions and for the purposes of Section 6 of this 2015 Act.
So you said 5A. I don't have an A on Section 5.
In Section 3, sorry. Section 3, 5A. Page 2.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Hurd.
I have a question about the increments of the leave. So currently it's written you can do as little as 1 hour at a time. Mm-hmm. I have concerns about that from a couple different ways. Again, I go back to the abuse concept. Somebody just doesn't want to get up and get to work on time, they can call and say, hey, I'm going to be an hour or 2 hours late because I'm sick. Right. Just nickel and dime it that way. Do you think it would be more responsible to do maybe 4 or 8 hour increments? Because, I mean, if you're sick, you're sick, in my opinion. I understand that some of us can get up in the morning and just not feel well. But I think you probably should do 4 or 8 hours. 1 hour at a time can get kind of dicey, I think. What's your response to that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we considered this through the context of creating first the Portland law and then in Eugene as well. And I would say I'd look at it from a couple of different perspectives. One is that an hour or down to the increment of how an employee is paid is already what's required in state law. So in a lot of cases, we refer back to existing state law to try to make sure that we're not adding additional complication to employers who are trying to implement this. And the second thing is I think the intention around being able to use it down to an hour is so folks can, you know, seek preventive care, mental health care, and we want to encourage them doing that. That actually serves to really reduce health care costs for all of us. But the other thing is that, you know, if an employee is working at a shift where, you know, they're needed and they get a call that their kid is sick near the end of the day, and what they need is an hour, we feel like they should take an hour, that it's actually minimally disruptive to the employer to allow an employee to take time down to the hour so they can really go for just the time that they need to take to get to the doctor's appointment or pick up that sick kid, than to take it in longer increments, which requires them being away from the workplace for an extended amount of time and requires bringing in an additional employee potentially to cover for that time. So I think that down to the hour is both the standard currently, and it also, we think, is sort of minimally disruptive on both sides.
Follow up.
Go ahead.
You spoke of complication for the employer. I am self-employed. I'm a very small business owner. I got 2 employees. It's going to be much more complicated to dice this up into small increments than it is to do 4-hour or 8-hour increments. And I know it is a part of the bill, but you spoke of leaving work to go tend to a sick family member. That's not paid sick leave for the employee. That's paid time off for them to go take care of someone else.
Is there a question?
So it's more of a statement
Okay.
rather than a question.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions? Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know you really didn't want to call on me, but if I may, just kind of going on what you said, being able to take care of preventative care and things like that. Is that something that would need to be prescribed by a licensed medical professional, or would it be something rather than being prescribed, just recommended? Like I have high blood pressure, and there's stuff that the doctor wants me to do or recommends that I do, but I still have that choice. Is it something that needs to be prescribed or just recommended?
Right. Representative Widener and Chair Holby, the way that this is drafted, where an absence is foreseeable, and this is sort of the way that we're cracking that nut, where the absence is foreseeable, and in the case of preventive care, it would be, there is some language that requires the employee to schedule that time and use that time in a way that is minimally invasive to the employer. So they need to do it at hours that work kind of for the employer. There's some discussion that happens, some back and forth that allows for the person to have access to that time when it's foreseeable in a way that's not disruptive to the operations of the employer. So there isn't a provision specifically that spells out who dictates what kind of health care you need as an employee, but more that where it can be scheduled in advance, it should be done in a way that's not cumbersome for your employer.
I was looking at section. It's pretty vague.
Do you have a follow-up?
So if I may follow up.
Do you
yes.
have a follow-up question? Go ahead.
Section 6, I notice, is fairly vague, and I don't know if that's something where you're working on amendments and things for that to kind of make it clear between an employee and employer, because right now it is very vague. I don't know if you've been through page 3, section 6.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we want it to be as expansive as possible in defining what access to health services looks like, and feel that accessing these kinds of basic health provisions allows for folks to seek medical care and get things treated in advance before they spiral into larger and more expensive problems. But that is not the section, and I will try to find for you the section where we talk about the amount of time that an employee needs to give notice where the leave is foreseeable. I believe that's section 7. And we actually, through the context of the recent work group, changed the length of time that an employee needs to give notice, where the advance notice is possible, to mirror standards that employer groups preferred out of Seattle.
Thank you. I notice in testimony there was some mention of California's paid sick leave, who's had the most experience with this. And you made comment about or maybe it wasn't you. Someone made comment about the employer satisfaction with this law, and it was like 75% or something. Can you? I'm surprised that was that survey taken sometime after this, like a year after it's been implemented, 2 years, 3 years, and you know, can you expand on that? And has that information been submitted to us and?
If it hasn't, we will submit it for sure, Chair Holvey. Thank you for the question.
I'd be curious about that survey.
It's referencing San Francisco that had 5 years of use of the policy, that it averaged like 2 days per person per year, that we figured is about 0.8% of payroll for use utilization, and that the employers, so we can get you, we'll get the report, but it showed a very de minimis use, and that there's an inclination where you have a PTO bank, they would rather try to reserve or save it for vacation or something else.
Do you know if that survey recognized any issues with abuse?
I didn't see the referencing, because these all provide tools for the employer if there is abuse.
Right. Chair Holvey, there is a lengthier report that we're happy to provide that surveyed employers and really went into more depth about their experiences with implementation and associated costs and experiences with employee abuse. I think we can say with some assurity, after watching these laws be implemented in a variety of different places, that there are both employees and employers that abuse all kinds of standards, and that those are a minimal percentage of folks. Most employees and employers use the laws as they're intended.
And just one other question. I know Councilwoman Fritz had referenced, you know, the size of the company being, you know, really difficult to track. And so in thinking about how this impacts small business or employees of small business versus large, do you see any relevance to, you know, saying like Portland did, you know, 5 employees or under, you don't have to comply to this law, or, you know, and I think Eugene went, you know, with 0. They went with, you know, all companies have to comply. So I'm just curious how you see the impacts of those two different proposals, and what, you know, what should the state be looking at?
Mm-hmm. Well, feel free to speak if you'd like to. I don't want to hog the mic, but Chair Holvey, I would say we definitely come from the perspective that a part of this is an economic security issue, but a part of it is also a public health issue. And again, that, you know, folks get sick regardless of the size of their employer. I would say, too, one of the challenges that Commissioner Frintz is pointing to is how, when you have a threshold that varies from paid to unpaid, you count employees. What happens when you transition from 5 to 6 or 6 to 5? Does that time get converted, not converted? There were some sort of esoteric questions that I feel like we had to answer around that threshold in the Portland law that we, you know, think would be better served not answering again at the state level. I think what we've heard in having, you know, thousands of conversations really with employers all over the place is keep it simple. The simpler it is, the easier it is for small employers to understand and implement. Employers who don't have employment attorneys and HR departments, that the simpler we can keep it, the better. So where we add a bunch of additional complication, I think it's harder for those folks to understand what they're required to do. And, you know, additionally, I would say the premise of this is fairly simple. I mean, it's, I think, something that, for the most part, the calculations around how folks accrue time and take time can be done in a very straightforward way, and is not as difficult to do when you have a few employees that all work in the same place as it is to maybe do when you have a large number of employees, and those folks have large HR departments to compensate for that.
So, and one final question is, you know, based around, I guess, the incentive for people to come to work when they're ill, you know, just sort of highlighting that. I certainly don't like people coming to work ill because, you know, one staff person gets sick, then another staff person gets sick, and pretty soon half your workforce is sick, and which has really becomes problematic at a time. So one of the things that I notice in this bill is basically that it's important to have the paid sick time off. Because the incentive for people who are struggling would be to come to work sick because they need the money. And I think, is that what you see in the, I guess, in the food service grocery retail industry?
We know industry? That, yeah, I grew up in the grocery industry since age 14. I can tell you that I know a lot of people on a daily basis preparing food are sick. On any given day, I mean, especially in the winter months, we know people have to make a living. And, you know, one of the constraints, I think there was a question by Representative Barreto or a statement about, is this fair for the imposition of these costs to an employer? But it's more holistic, I think, than that. So I respect the question, but I also know that health care has declined in our country. We've had more uninsured, and so we've had exacerbations of problems where people are getting sicker. They have less of a threshold to fall under, and they're going to work sick. There's jokes in the grocery industry that I don't believe are proper before this committee, but they're it highlights the problem very well. On any given day, you can go into a store and you're going to probably find somebody sick. They have to. Most of our industry doesn't have first day of sick pay. In the grocery industry that's unionized in Oregon, it's third day. But if they're not represented, then there is none. So it's an exacerbated problem. And then I always found it interesting that when I'm running a register, people stay home from sick from their job, will come into the store. So we still, yeah. It's like, sure, why not? I mean, we get the double dose. They're getting their pharmacy prescriptions, they're getting whatever. It just seems like in food service and food handling, it's just nonsense not to have a public policy that is community-wide for public safety.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony this morning. Thank you very much. It's a big issue for us, and I really appreciate all the work you've put into it.
Thank you.
Up next, I'd like to have Betsy Earls, Debbie Kitchen, and Jan Meekums. Good morning and welcome to the committee. Appreciate you making the time to give us your thoughts on this. If you would introduce yourself for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Betsy Earls representing Associated Oregon Industries. It's good to see you this morning. AOI represents approximately 1,500 businesses across the state, and most of those some of those companies are quite large, but the majority of our members have fewer than 25 employees. So most of our testimony is based on the impact that this sick leave law would have on smaller companies that we represent. When proponents talk about the need to require paid sick leave, the implication is frequently that the businesses that don't offer it don't do so because they're inflexible or unsympathetic, okay, or maybe just so focused on the bottom line that they're unwilling to work with their employees who maybe need a day off because they're sick or an hour or two to take their child to the doctor. My main message for you today is that this line of thinking does a real disservice to Oregon's small business owners because it ignores the fact that those companies are run by people that are doing the very best that they can, not only to create a marketable product or service, but to provide jobs that are paying enough to sustain their employees and their communities. Over the last 2 weeks, we have asked our members to calculate the cost of implementing this paid sick leave bill in their own companies, and let me just give you a few examples. A towing company with 23 employees responded to us by saying that it would cost them an additional $22,000 a year. A manufacturing company with 25 employees said that it would cost them an additional $20,000 per year. Another manufacturing company with 42 employees, $142,000 a year. So as you can see, the costs are all over the board because these companies' pay and benefits are highly individual, frequently shaped specifically to the needs of their own workforces. Every one of those businesses is different, and the needs of their workforces are different. But when the state uniformly imposes a mandate that is as costly as a paid sick leave mandate would be, their ability to provide the benefits that best suit their own workforces really, really narrow. When a small employer faces increased costs such as these, they have three basic options. They can cut costs, they can reduce net revenue, or they can raise prices. Given the competitive pressures that are facing small companies today, not just in Oregon, but across the country, the likeliest outcome is that employers will have to look to several places to pay for the mandate. They'll trim not only their net profit, but their vendor costs, their payroll, and their reinvestment into the business, or they can trade off the sick leave requirement against other benefits that they currently provide that might be better suited to their workforce's individual needs. This is no way to grow an economy. I can give you a laundry list of the problems that this bill or any similar bill would create in the workplace, not only for employers, but in some cases, employees too. And we can talk about that another time. But for today, I would just ask you to remember that what you decide to do on bills like this paid sick leave mandate is not something that you're doing to a faceless corporation. You'll be directly impacting the small businesses that are the backbone of Oregon's economy and also the backbone of the districts that you represent. Thank you.
Okay. Good morning, Chair Holvey and committee members. My name is Debbie Kitchen. I am the current chair of the Portland Business Alliance. The alliance represents over 1,800 businesses, about 80% of which are small businesses. I'm also the co-owner of a construction company with my husband, Jim Kitchen, and it's Interworks LLC, and we're a Portland based small business. Thank you for inviting me to give my perspective on the paid sick time bill today. I think I have a unique point of view because I am possibly the only one here that you'll hear from today that is actually implementing the bill in the city of Portland's paid sick time ordinance. This bill largely mirrors it. I can tell you that it hasn't been easy. In fact, it's been difficult and expensive for me and other businesses that are members of the alliance operating in Portland. The Alliance opposed the Portland ordinance and does not support the bill before you today. As with the Portland ordinance, this bill adopts a one-size-fits-all approach that does not acknowledge the unique circumstances of any given business. Employers care about their employees, and they don't want them coming to work sick. But we also have to pay close attention to our costs, and these mandates impact how we manage our individual businesses and reduce the flexibility and customization that we can do in our own small business to meet the needs of both of our business demands and our employees. When Portland was considering its ordinance, small business owners turned out to implore the city to consider the impacts to their businesses. And there have been some adjustments, but we still think there are a number of issues that are a concern. But first, let me tell you about my business. We are a small employer with 6 employees, plus my husband and I work full-time in the business. We provide paid time off for our employees that is in excess of what the Portland ordinance requires. We provide a retirement plan for our employees and match their contributions up to 3% of their earnings. We provide health insurance, and we pay 100% of the premium for our employees. We weathered the Great Recession, which hit companies like mine that are focused on commercial and residential remodeling. It hit us very hard. But we try to take very good care of our employees. They are the most important part of our business. They are the ones who are out in people's homes and offices doing construction services, and we value our employees very much and work very collaboratively with them to have the best kind of benefits and pay and the package that meets their needs and our needs. Even though my business already offered paid time off in excess of the requirement, implementing the city's mandate has been difficult and has led to increased costs and time spent on compliance. Specifically, it doesn't make sense to accrue sick time at a rate of 1 per 30 hours worked. A lot of businesses do track their work on a 40-hour basis, and we do have employees we have very few employees that are part-time, only one currently, although that's been different at different times of the economy. Even businesses that offer paid sick time like mine have additional record-keeping, tracking, and reporting burdens under the mandate. It's unnecessary if a business already exceeds the minimum requirement. I also feel the need to express some of the concerns I have heard from other Alliance members, not only from small businesses, but large as well. Some reported that the requirement has cost them tens of thousands of dollars, which is not an insignificant amount to many business owners. For some, significant issues have arisen because existing collectively bargained agreements are not exempt, and they interfere with the negotiated contract between employer and employee. It has also proven difficult for an employer with a melded paid time off policy to show they meet the standard. Finally, for those of us that work inside and outside of the city, tracking every time an employee crosses the line is difficult. In our case, we have projects throughout the Portland metro area. So an employee might be working on a Portland project, but might go into Hillsboro to pick up supplies and vice versa. So tracking that time has become untenable for our company, since they might be working at 3 or 4 projects in a day and also going around the metro area. So we've just opted to pay the benefits as if they were working 100% in Portland. However, it's different for every type of business. And so I just think this puts a difficult situation. So the bill before you does not preempt local ordinances like Portland and does nothing to eliminate the potential problem of a patchwork of differing local ordinances to keep track of and comply with. Preempting local ordinances is critical. The economy in which we operate does not stop at city borders. So thank you very much for the opportunity to share my experience.
Thank you.
Chair Holvey and members of the committee, my name is Jan Meekums. I'm the state director of NFIB, National Federation of Independent Business. We have been advocating on behalf of our members since 1943. We have about 350,000 members nationwide, and we have about 7,000 members here in Oregon. We are truly a small business organization, with our average member having less than 10 employees. This bill is potentially extremely impactful to our members. We are a member-driven organization, and through ballots, polls, and surveys, we seek the position of our small business members on legislation that is impactful to their business and their employees. Through this process, our members determine NFIB's position. In 2012, we balloted our org and members by asking them the question, do you favor legislation requiring employers in Oregon to give employees a guaranteed number of days off annual paid sick leave? We provided an unbiased information, both opposing and supporting paid sick leave. The results? 95% of our members were opposed, 3% supported, and 2% were undecided. This is a consistent message we receive nationwide from our membership. It is not the notion of paid sick leave that our members are opposed to. For many of our members that voted in opposition, actually, as was said by Ms. Kitchen, do provide paid sick leave. The issue is mandated. The issue is one size fits all. The issue is what works for not only the employer, the employee may not work, the mandated law may not work, and even some employees may prefer to continue to work it out on an individual basis with their employer. And many of these employers remember when they were getting started prior to being able to provide paid sick leave, if such a mandate would have been passed, how difficult it would have been for them to grow their business. And we believe that those that can afford paid sick leave for their employees should provide it. And those that don't, it is because they cannot afford it. There are four areas of negative impact upon small employers. One, compensation costs in wage and benefits are increased. Two, it reduces the flexibility in managing the employer and employee needs. Three, increased administrative burden in tracking and reporting. And four, increased compliance liability. The employer is left with three choices which have been mentioned: hire temporary staff, which may double or in some cases even triple the hourly cost of the absent employee. Two, pay overtime, creating additional cost and compliance issues. And three, leave the work undone. An example of an expense experienced by one of our small business members following the implementation of Portland's paid sick leave ordinance was $6,000 just to hire an attorney to rewrite their employment manual. This is a small business and a small portion of the increased costs from this ordinance. And that this small business, it's right out of the bottom line. What do they have to do in order to make up for that loss? And it has been mentioned that front load is the way some of small businesses take care of the burden. When you have two or three employees, to front load with 56 hours at the beginning of the year is not tenable. And if it's a type of business that there's high turnover, they have an employee, multiple employees for a three-employee business that has 56 years that are given in paid sick time over and over and over, which can be financially impossible. Also, these are examples of why mandated paid sick leave will result in job losses. Earlier today, it was mentioned about the San Francisco, the Connecticut, and the Seattle programs. There are some differing opinions on how those programs are working in the views of small business. From the Employment Policy Institute, they report that San Francisco paid sick leave, for instance, that a survey of the employees in the city found that nearly 30% of the lowest wage employees reported layoffs or reduced hours at their workplace. A separate survey by the Urban Institute found that some city employers had scaled back on employee bonuses, vacation time, and part-time help to adapt to the law's cost. In Connecticut, first in the nation statewide paid sick leave mandate, found that some employers had been forced to reduce hours, wages, and even jobs in response to the law. And Seattle, the newest implementation, EPI engaged a survey research firm to poll roughly 300 businesses. And in Seattle, one of the things that they found was that among businesses that started providing leave, 83% or more than 8 in 10 businesses said that sickness in the workplace was not a serious problem at all prior to taking the law into effect. And again, in Seattle, 15.7% of employers raised prices in response to the new law, 18.3% of the employers reduced hours and staff in response to the new law, and 17.3% of employers either increased the cost to employees of their current benefits or eliminated the benefits they used to offer. The point being that there are trade-offs. There's an article from the Harvard Review that also substantiates these same numbers, and so it's not always as good for the employee as one may think at first blush. And a 2011 study conducted by NFIB's Research Foundation on the economic impact of HR 2460 requiring paid leave on a national level, it forecasted over 570,000 jobs lost in the private sector, and cumulatively over $382 billion in real output would be lost between 2011 and 2015 should that piece of legislation have passed. And another NFIB study conducted in 2014 regarding New Jersey's proposed paid sick leave legislation, the same results held true. It was forecast to cost New Jersey 25,000 jobs by 2023, and in real output could decrease by more than $18.1 billion. Small firms would bear 58% of the job losses. 50% of those small firms had less than 100 employees, and 54% small businesses lost sales. Oregon small businesses are still recovering from the Great Recession. Although manufacturing in the Portland metro area show encouraging growth, that is not consistent with many small businesses, especially those in rural Oregon. Oregon's unemployment rate remains above the national average. Now is not the time to create policy that will further suppress our economic growth and job creation by putting additional burden on our small businesses in a state that is truly a small business state. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Questions? Representative Fagan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a few of them, so I think I'll just ask the questions to avoid a lot of back and forth, if that's okay with you, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
So, first of all, thank you for your testimony. And so, first of all, to Ms. Earls for AOI, would you mind providing the panel with the exact question that you asked to your members about what it will cost them to implement? For example, if you had asked Mr. Barreto that 20 minutes ago, he would have said $110,000 when the proponents of the bill told him, oh, actually, if you have an existing policy, you don't have to change any additional. He would have answered very differently. So I want to be sure that the question you asked them was educational enough to let the employers know that they have an existing policy that's 56 hours or more a year. They actually don't have to provide any additional. So if you'd provide that for the panel, that would be great. For Ms. Meekum, if you could do the same for the questions that you provided to your
Absolutely.
Members, I want to make sure that they understood that they're, for the vast majority of employers that do already provide some form of leave, there isn't any additional cost. And then to Ms. Kitchen, I just had a question in terms of, and it's wonderful to hear that you already provided that benefit to your employees. I've spoken with a lot of employers who, like you, are good employers who've already provided this benefit, and they've said, wow, I actually have always had to now compete against employers who didn't provide these benefits, and now we're on an equal playing field. So if you could also talk about what it's like for your business to actually compete against employers that don't provide the same benefit, i.e. maybe don't have the same labor costs. And then just as a comment, Ms. Meekums mentioned a whole bunch of sky is falling things that happened in San Francisco after the implementation of their policy. I'll also just note for the record, their policy was implemented in February of 2007, which was also at the beginning of the greatest recession in modern history. So just as a point to pin any job losses specifically to the sick leave policy, I believe is a little bit disingenuous. So, and I'll take my questions off the air. Thank you. Or answers.
Representative Nose.
So my question is also for Jan Meekums. Thank you for your testimony.
Certainly.
In your written statement here, you say the employer is left with three choices: hire a temporary staff person, pay overtime, leave the work undone. I didn't hear anything in the bill that would require you to hire somebody or backfill behind someone who is sick. I mean, so what do you do currently when someone calls in sick and the sick leave is unpaid? What do your members do? They don't all hire somebody, right, or bring in a temp, right?
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, thank you for your question. That is true. There is if a small employer has an employee that is out sick, as it is now, they may or may not pay for that, may not be paid time off. If it is paid time off now, it wouldn't be any different. If it isn't paid time off now for the employee, it would be different for the employer because he is paying, after this law should pass, he is paying for the employee who's absent, his paid time, and if it is the type of business that he has to hire a substitute, they're also paying for the substitute. Does that answer your question?
Okay, Mr. Chair, if I just follow up. I understand about how now you have to pay for a person who's off sick, but under the current system, right, you still had to either hire somebody or just let the work go undone, right? I mean, like, the bill is not requiring you to incur in costs to bring someone on temporarily just because you're offering paid sick leave. I think that's my point, which is there's nothing in the bill that says you have to bring in a temp while someone's out sick. You can still leave the work undone or, you know, do what what they've been doing.
Chair Holvey and members of the committee, that is true, and that points up to the individuality of a bit small business's circumstances. For some, they may not hire someone. For others, they may be able to leave the work go undone. It depends how long the employee is gone. But for sure, if this passes and it's a small company that's not financially able at this time to provide paid sick leave, there is an additional cost that they are not incurring at this point in time.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just in the line of this thought here, if you're in a production mode where you have to have all individuals there in a production line, you usually end up calling someone in early or holding them over at time and a half. That's usually the way that works. Anything usually in most employers in production mode, anything over 8 hours a day or 40 hours a week is time and a half, period. So the other thing I have to ask is, Ms. Kitchen, Section 9 of this is about record keeping. And it's maintained records of hours worked and paid sick time accrued and used by each employee. Written notification of at least quarterly to each employee in the amount of accrued and unused paid sick time available for use by the employees, and it goes on about the commissioner and this and that. How difficult would it be to keep track of this?
Well, it really varies for each company. Some companies have much more automated systems. Some companies, for example, my company, we accrue benefits on the anniversary date rather than the calendar year. There's a lot of the language that addresses the calendar year differences, and we go from, on the anniversary date for our employees, it bumps up to a higher level of benefits in many cases, but we have to kind of keep track of both to make sure that we are giving our employees what they are due in terms of our overall benefits. So, and then just keeping track, we employ, you know, spreadsheets to keep track of it. And doing the quarterly reports to me was totally unnecessary because our employees can come in at any day and ask to see their you know, records. We offer them available to them, you know, just at any time. There's two of us in the office who are authorized access to those records and can provide it. So there were just a number of things that were added work that we were already providing more than what was, you know, required in the law. And I felt there should be some way to have some type of, if you can show that you're offering more, that you have some type of method of having an exemption or where you know, you're in compliance and that's deemed in compliance because of the package you're offering. And I would really echo what Andrea Peluso from Family Forward said in keeping it simple. Keep it as simple as possible and as flexible as possible so that you can meet the needs of different types of employees. But we did find it an added administrative burden. And it is, part of it is also just that there are so many areas where there are compliance rules already. And companies like ours that are trying to follow all the rules that apply to us are in having these extra costs. And in my business, especially construction, there are a lot of companies that not only aren't licensed, don't have insurance, aren't paying workers' comp, aren't paying payroll taxes. You know, sometimes I'm ending up competing with companies like that. And my guess is they're not going to follow the paid sick rules either when they come, you know, when they're making, if they're making those kind of decisions already. So my plea would be to not have additional regulations on the businesses that are already, you know, providing these benefits and things and the cost of compliance to them, and really go at enforcement to the businesses that aren't even, you know, covering workers' comp or not aren't paying payroll taxes and just all those litany of things. That happens some more probably in my industry than others, but it is, I think, an issue of, you know, just being understanding the level, all the layers of regulation that we have when we face as a small business.
Representative Evans.
Yes, Chair Hovey and members of the panel, I have three really brief questions. The first one is, and I'd like each to answer, do you believe that access to paid sick time off is a matter of national security or not?
Let me take a stab at this, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm not qualified to speak about whether anything is a matter of national security or not.
Okay.
I can't answer. I really have no idea. I'm not an expert in that area.
I would answer the same.
Okay. Well, follow-up question, if I could.
Follow-up. I hope there's a follow-up.
I want to hear this.
There are a lot of issues that companies could and should have all types of discretion. One of the challenges we're facing in the 21st century, whether we like to live, like to know it or not, is that the easiest way to take down our civil and society structures have to do with contagion. Long ago, the biggest fear of the United States was nuclear bombs coming in Big Bear bombers across the way. You could do that these days, but it's actually expensive and would waste time. The easiest way to bring us to our knees is actually to make people sick, put them on a plane, and send them everywhere. My concern, and this is a concern that to me is a question of ends and means, I understand that there is sometimes a hard compromise that needs to be happening. But at the end of the day, private sector, public sector, non-profit sector should recognize that there are certain things that we need to be responsible for, among them finding ways, finding methods to make sure that people, when they are sick, are not getting other people sick in the workplace. And I want to applaud those businesses that are currently finding ways to do that right now when they don't have to. And to me, it's a matter of safety, and it's a matter of national security in this way. I think the question that we should all ask ourselves is, if it's a matter of national security, keeping our workforce safe and our food supply secure and our waterways secure, then why is it fair or even tactically or strategically smart or advisable that some people are less important to national security than others? That's the fundamental question. Thank you.
Other questions? Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Let's spread this around a little.
When I was in the military, we were waging nuclear war with a bear skin and a stone knife. But at that time, they had vectors that they could take into the city of New York. And what is outlined here is it's a terrorist act. We're susceptible to that any time as long as we have a porous border. The national security part to me is something that we're susceptible to at any given time with a vector. And they can literally decimate your population in a short order of a few weeks with a vector. So that's been around for a long, long time. Just wanted to let you know that.
Yeah. Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm getting back to jobs. I took this job, I ran for this position based on making Oregon a more business-friendly state, and I wanted to be on this committee because I wanted to be a positive influence on that. When I'm looking here at a Bureau of Labor and Statistics of the other three states that have this law implemented, California is at number 49, and number 50 being the worst. Oregon is at 43, and these are unemployment. Connecticut being at number 40, and then Massachusetts being at number 25. I mean, I'm looking at this saying these states that we may be modeling after are not stellar in employing people. And so I think for us to go in that direction is a bad move, but do you have any information that would say, look, if we implemented this, it would either create jobs or kill jobs? Either Jan or Betsy.
Yes, I do have information that it would kill jobs in studies that we have done, and I'll provide those to the committee, and it's research that I've done as well. I have not seen research that says mandated paid. I have not seen research that says mandated paid sick leave will increase jobs.
Representative Nose.
Mr. Chair, just a comment, which is that I, too, wanted to be on this committee, and I'm excited about this bill. It's a basic benefit that everybody ought to have when they're at work. We all get sick, and it takes the benefit out of competition so that all employers have to offer a baseline benefit and makes it something that everybody has to do, and we all have, just like Social Security and a lot of other things that we do that provide a safety net.
Other questions? Representative Widener.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know you're saving the best for last.
So, I'm still yet to come. Don't cast any kind of motives upon what I...
I don't know if you have a chance, and this may be something that needs to go back to Boley or Legislative Council, but I was looking through Section 12, the requirement of this section, and it just says... It's basically saying the building and construction industry whose terms and conditions of employment are covered under collective bargaining agreements or longshoremen, it's moving them out of being under this with collective bargaining. And we had another union up here whose collective bargaining. And I'm wondering, I mean, if this is going to be legal under collective bargaining laws for the state of Oregon to exclude some and incorporate others, and then what's going to happen? And I think Jan or Betsy, one of you might have temp agencies that have people for employment. Would it be the person who hires that employee, getting back to what Representative Noss was saying? So someone calls in, they're sick, you use somebody from a temp agency. Who's responsible for the sick time for the person coming from the temp agency? And any one of you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Widener, I think I'll leave it to Boley about the legality of some collective bargaining agreements in and some out. I would point out what I think the proponents have said, and I'm speaking for them here, so they're welcome to pound me on the head after, is that the unions that are included in this bill act as something of hiring halls or perhaps even staffing agencies, and therefore it doesn't make sense to impose, and I'm totally speaking out of turn here, but it doesn't make sense to impose the sick leave requirement on those unions because they're not actually employing those people. But I would point out that in a private staffing agency, our reading of the bill is that the owners of the staffing agency would be required to track and provide the paid sick leave just like any other company. And if I made a hash of that answer for the proponents, I apologize.
Well, and I think one of the issues that the Portland Business Alliance is concerned about is our existing, you know, collectively bargained agreements that are now that would be out of compliance. And, you know, if they could be exempted until the next time, you know, then the next time they're reviewing their or doing a negotiation, they could take it up then. But to put existing contracts out of compliance, even though they're offering more than what is being required, is you know, creates a burden and an issue for those companies and employees that are in those agreements.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony, and I think we probably do have all sorts of state requirements that supersede collective bargaining agreements, for one. But Ms. Kitchens, I really appreciate you in particular for coming down and sharing with us your experience. I do sympathize with you. I've worked a long time trying to make sure all employers are playing by the same set of rules in terms of payroll tax and workers' comp and those sorts of things. I know your industry struggles with that. I do know that almost all employers are required to keep track of the hours their workers work, and so the extra burden for tracking that seems like it's, you know, just another column on the spreadsheet. But I do realize there is a little bit of administration that is needed in this bill, so I can appreciate the impact that will have. I must say, though, that sometimes, because I do payroll too, is that just figuring out the tax rates and the payroll deduction seems to be the biggest challenge for me. But with that, I really appreciate all your testimony this morning, and I'm sure our conversation will continue. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
With that, I'm going to close the informational meeting. And committee, tonight we will continue hearing this bill in public hearing, starting at what time?
Six
o'clock in hearing room F. Which time we do have a large number of people we are expecting to testify. We will we're meeting jointly with the Senate. They have asked that we refrain from questions and listen to the public hearing and listen to the people that have input on this. Obviously, the whatever bill comes back will be coming back to this committee again for further questions and for further dialogue. But I think it's important for us to hear from the people tonight. So I hope you all can make it. With that, I will close the House Committee on Business and Labor. House Committee on Business and Labor.